College basketball fans, welcome back to the College Ball Show. He's Marshall, I'm Chris, and we're here to discuss everything going on in the world of college basketball. Obviously, you know, tonight would have been the night. We're talking about within like an hour. Is it tip-off like 8 o'clock or something Central Time usually? Tonight would have been the night for the national championship game. We would have been coming off of two Final Four games from Saturday. More than likely, we wouldn't have done a show, maybe late tonight, but more than likely, we would have done a post-show Tuesday, and then, shit, the way it looks, or the way it works out, it would have been a week later, and the NBA playoffs would have started. Man. Anyway, we are back. Welcome back. Thanks for joining us. Once again, we understand this virus has really affected us in a lot of ways, obviously some way more traumatic than others. I've been lucky enough not to lose anyone, knock on wood, but we just appreciate the listenership, and we're going to keep doing this for a little bit here if you guys want us to keep doing it. We may go into the NBA, you know, in a little, you know, short amount of time, but yeah, basically we're just trying to be your distraction. On the show tonight, we will lead with that HBO documentary with the NCAA, with Christian Dawkins. So, yeah, we're going to talk about the Scheme. And what do you know? The NCAA are a bunch of crooks. Now, nothing new. There was new information, but a lot of stuff you heard. I shouldn't say new information, just more. And a lot of stuff you heard does not surprise me in the least bit. So we'll lead with that. We'll also address the potential issue of the NCAA having these seniors coming back for college basketball or any of these winter in spring sports, and just, you know, the problems without basketball revenue as much, what the problem could lead into, you know, this next year for schools in general, especially if there's no college football between. And the reason why we bring that up is because, as we know, football and basketball and college are the ones who fund, you know, the rest of the sports for the most part anyway. So we're going to talk about that. Then we're going to dive into, you know, some reminiscent of old times. Last week I did a UConn from the 90s and early 2000s, basically like a 95 to 2005 run. My co-host covered North Carolina in the 90s as well into the 2000s. He's going to cover the 2000s, as am I. We're going to go over, name some teams from that list. I think it's Sporting News. I'll let everybody know what exactly website or, you know, article we're talking about. But it's like a long list of teams that should have won a national championship that didn't. For instance, last week we talked about that Kansas Jayhawk team from 96-97 that was just loaded with talent, and they ended up getting beat. Now, they did get beat by the national championship team, Arizona, but at that time it didn't seem like that was going to be the outcome. So we'll talk a little bit about that. We'll talk about just a variety of the stuff we've been kind of doing. If this is your first time listening to the College Ball Show, you can find it right here on blogtalkradio.com/ropeitoperadio. It streams live at archives right here on Blog Talk. However, you don't have to just listen to it, whether you download it from Blog Talk or listen to it in the browser. You can find it anywhere. You just don't have to be on Blog Talk. You can find the Rope It Up Radio podcast to listen to the College Ball Show at Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Player FM, TuneIn, Spreaker, Stitcher, really across the board. We're also part of the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network, which can be found across the board, including Spotify. I forgot to mention that. You can use your Siri or Alexa through Spotify or tune in to find the platform. Why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.com? That's thegruelingtruth.com. They got a great sponsor over there, betnow.eu, with the promo code TGT. That's thegruelingtruth.com. It's basketball, it's football, it's baseball, it's boxing, it's everything in between. And one more thing, if you're thinking about cutting the cord, or you have and you're not quite happy, obviously a lot of folks at home, and we've been streaming a bunch of stuff, obviously, right? With no live sports, I got something for you. I do it myself. It's called AT&T TV Now. It's live streaming cable. They have the 7-day free trial. There's no annual contracts. The plans start as low as $60 a month. You can stream it anywhere. They have the cloud DVR as well. It's called AT&T TV Now. It's live streaming cable. However, if you're just in a region of the country or like on the outskirts where some of the, you know, places across the country, the internet's not that strong. And it's one thing to use Netflix or Amazon to archive stuff, but when you're talking about a live streaming platform, it's a little bit different. There is a different option. It's called AT&T TV Now. So that'd be your normal cable package. It's a growing platform, though. It's not everywhere. It's here in Minneapolis, Minnesota, in New York, parts of Florida, Texas, California, all the way up to Seattle, other places like St. Louis in the Midwest. Basically, you just put your you Google it, put your area code in there, see if you can get AT&T TV for the normal cable package. Otherwise, there's AT&T TV Now that's live streaming cable. Okay. I'm going to go ahead and bring in my co-host to talk about a couple of things before we get into reminiscing about the olden days. No, it's really not that long ago. But I still have been hitting up a bunch of 80s and 90s basketball, as far as NBA, you know, finals and conference finals and whatnot. I've been dabbling in the 98 and 96 team with the Bulls. I saw some of those. And then of late, although you're not going to like this, I did watch game 5 and game 7, actually 6-2 of the Golden State and Cleveland comeback from 3-1. I know you're not going to like it, but I did watch that. Watched a couple other things. Watched the year before game, was it 6 or 5, when Golden State did beat Cleveland. So I've been watching a lot of ball, and then obviously on CBS Sports Network, we told you about that last week too. That's where a lot of college ball tournament stuff is. You know, you can ESPN and Fox or FS1, they have college basketball, but it's regular season stuff. So it's really not that great. Some of it is because it's great matchups, but the tourney, you know, the tourney's where it's at. So, how you doing, man? You know, all things considered right now.
I'm lucky. I can't complain much. I'm doing good. I'm thankfully, teaching from home. I'm getting paid, which puts me in the very lucky percentile now. And I'm like you, man. I, for all I know, my close friends and family are good. I don't know anyone that's been infected. But with that being said, I've obviously been going on Twitter more often now because why not? Something to do. And you keep seeing all these posts of people who are losing parents and grandparents to the virus. Yeah. And they can't even see them say goodbye in the hospital. Like, losing a family member alone is, like, obviously a very awful, brutal thing. But to see all these people, like, gushing their hearts out because they can't even, like, be in the hospital with them is just really sad. I mean, I don't know. You just got to stay optimistic and positive. But for those people going through that stuff, man, I mean, I can't imagine losing someone you care about is really tough. And I've never really had to been through it. But to do it, like, over the phone, like, I don't know. So just I hopefully just stay fortunate and keep praying that we trim this thing down, like you said, so we can get back to somewhat of a regular life and hopefully, you know, yeah, just get back to regular life. But besides that, like I said, I've just been running outside a lot, going for runs, listening to podcasts, bouncing around Amazon Prime and Netflix. Chris, I do have to make some minor news to make this a little more comical. I thought Tiger King was like shit. I did not like the show. I know the whole country loves them, probably in the 3 percentile, but I had a tough time watching people who were just completely just in their own country way of life. I couldn't do it. I think I skipped like 3 episodes. So not a fan. I like being the minority for most things, I guess. I'm definitely a minority there, but brother, I couldn't get into it. I don't know. Have you seen Tiger King?
I haven't seen it yet. I've been holding off on, I had a bunch of stuff on my DVR and also just, like bookmarked, so I've been catching up with that. And on AT&T TV Now, not to like have another ad, but they do have Epics for free for a month or something like that.
Yeah.
So the Godfather of Harlem, I've been watching that.
I watched that. I finished that. That's really good.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I like the dynamics where they're mixing a variety of stuff in there. And obviously the cast is really good, too. I think the guy who plays Malcolm X is pretty good Malcolm, too. And obviously, you know, the lead of the whole thing is stud. So,
Forrest Whitaker,
right. Yep. Yeah. And then, you know, some documentaries and films I had kind of on my watch list for Amazon. But I had Netflix a long, long time ago, but I'm huge on documentaries. Up until the last couple of years, a lot of the stuff on there on Netflix was like popular documentaries, but I saw them all.
Sure.
And now they're starting to fund them and make their own, or they're getting just better ones overall. So I'm actually about to do, in a couple of days, I'm going to do a 30-day free trial and try to catch up on anything, everything. So I haven't seen that, but that is a good point. Just to rewind a little bit, on a serious note, you know, it's one thing to lose, you know, a family member, friends, whatever. But you're right. There is something different about someone that has to die by themselves. Their families can't even come close enough to see them to say goodbye. And it's hard enough to lose someone, but you really put it in perspective there. And it's something I'm glad you said, because I've been thinking about. I forgot to mention that and how different that really is and can be, man.
Yeah, and you know, it's reason why there's obviously hostility and anger going on, because, I mean, there's ways we could have maybe done better for our country, whether it's the government, whether it's people who were being jackasses and partying in Florida beaches. Like, all the spring break parties are going to lead to people losing grandparents, and they're going to, you know, like when you interview those kids, like, dude, I'll take the virus on. I don't care. I just want to get drunk. Well, dude, that was so stupid and just so hopeless. But, you know, stuff like that's going to lead to the awkward stuff we said, Chris, of people passing away. And then you go to Twitter and Facebook and say, man, I just lost my, you know, grandma or dad because of this virus. And it's like, well, shit, you should have been able to go see them. So hopefully people keep, you know, staying safe and doing their distancing. I know when I went to Target yesterday, I didn't have a mask on. My mom sent me some, but a lot of people had masks on. People were kind of minding their own business. Like, I do think that this has brought out a majority of good in people. Like, there's obviously always going to be the 30% of our country that's hopeless, but I really do think a lot of this is people are doing their part. They're trying to stay safe, and you're always going to have some random, you know, jack off. Yeah. But for the most part, I really think that's people are doing their part, because it, you know, you hate seeing all this sad stuff. And yeah. Anyways, let me recommend, and then I'll get onto the scheme. But yeah. I did find actually a really good Netflix documentary called How to Fix a Drug Scandal. It's about these two ladies who were the only ladies responsible for testing drugs when people were arrested in the state of Massachusetts. And both these ladies end up having, one has a huge drug addiction, one decides to cheat the system. And man, it's only 4 hours, so it's a 4-part documentary, but what a fascinating.
And cool what's story. That on?
It's on Netflix, How to Fix a Drug Scandal. Very, very interesting about how these ladies were working the system. I'll just say that. And these lawyers do their part, but it's a great 4-hour binge. I watched it. I did 2 episodes one night and did 2 the next morning, but a fun watch while you're kind of chilling at home with looking for shows to watch.
Yeah, there's been a couple of the, you know, cases that have come out that aren't documentaries yet that are kind of similar to that, or just like the testing center in that the police use and how corrupt that was, and you're just like, oh my god, like these people, like they had to let a ton of people out of jail and everything like that. And yeah, I read something about that, but I haven't seen a quality documentary on it yet, so I'll definitely check that out. And speaking of documentaries, I mean, yes. HBO, like a lot of like networks are getting better at documentaries now. I remember like late 90s, everybody just thought a documentary was Michael Moore. And it was going to be only political, and it was almost becoming like a dirty word. It's like, so I can't watch a fucking documentary? Like, I'm just trying to learn stuff. You know what I mean? You got to see where the source is coming from. It doesn't always have to be, you know, you got to check the past work of the person. You got to look at the facts and yada, yada, yada. But HBO has always been on the forefront of documentaries, obviously, and they really hit a home run with this one. Christian Dawkins, first of all, like, this kid was advanced for his mind state, especially when, you know, his whole life was basketball, of course, but for him to, like, I thought it was really interesting that he had a website when he was, like, 14 years old, and these coaches are paying this money just to get his scouting report. You could tell at a very young age, you know, based off his family and what he, you know, what he did, that this guy was going to be somewhere. You know, it was going to be basketball, but it wasn't going to be on the court per se. But this freaking guy was dedicated early on. You could really tell. I think they did a good job of explaining that part and just explaining this Christian Dawkins guy so you could kind of, you know, see where he's coming from type thing.
Yeah, it's in case you're kind of wondering what the hell we're talking about, Christian Dawkins was basically a guy who was basically an agent to help kids with college and help kids go pro. But one of his main points he makes in the documentary is that if you want to be an agent for someone to go pro, you got to build the connection with them before they go to college, which makes sense. Obviously, it's a really small sample size of guys that do go pro to the NBA. I mean, there's 315 Division I teams, and you only have 60 people get drafted. So if you want to be a good agent worth a shit, you know, it really is your goal. As he says, dude, you got to meet these kids in high school. When you see this kid, hey, you know, for example, like the Draymond Green, because that's where he went to high school. I'm sure some agent met Draymond when he was going to high school in Michigan and then followed him to Sparty and wanted to follow him to go to the pros. So the documentary talks about how these agents are basically giving these kids money, helping them go to the college they want to choose to, and then keeping those bonds with them for them to go pro. And it really just touches upon how corrupt, and you and I were talking about this, Chris, how corrupt the system is, you know, of these guys or these young kids who are 19 and 20 or 18 are getting paid a ton of money to go certain places. But at least for my opinion, as you watch the documentary, you really kind of get like why it happens like it does. You know, I think when I was maybe in middle school, I would have been like, oh my God, you know, people are getting paid to go to college. Like,
yeah, that's dishonest. Sounds, it's against,
you know,
the rules.
It seems shady. Like, the NCAA should block that. But when you do the math and you're realizing how much money the NCAA makes off March Madness per se, and how much money these schools make in revenue, whether it be for gate tickets or jerseys or TV contracts, like, you know, huh? So we're making millions and billions of dollars. And these kids are expected to just, you know, be angels. I liked it. I'll say this quote, I'll throw it back to you. But I liked how one of the reporters in the documentary, I believe his name was Dan Wetzel, who works for Yahoo. He's like, okay, so you're saying that these kids can't get paid to go play basketball at Louisville or Kentucky per se. But if you were Google and you were trying to hire a new tech savvy guy to make, you know, internet programs or do something to make new inventions, you can't pay him like $30,000 to come work for you. Like, it really is one of the only companies in America where kids are going to produce you millions of dollars, but you recruiting them to work for you is frowned upon in basketball. Now, I know that comparing Google hiring someone out of college or, you know, in college is different than basketball.
But it's capitalism.
The concept of our country is, hey, man, I think you could make my company a lot of money. Here is a recruiting bonus or a check to help you do so. So when you put that term in your mouth, Chris, it really kind of does make sense about how, you know, these schools are making millions. The kids, they deserve a little piece of the pie. I know that rule is not going to ever change from the NCAA, but, it, you know, the documentary kind of put things in perspective that maybe you just kind of glanced over, or maybe some people actually believe the NCAA for at times.
Right, and it's called The Scheme. I think we've only said that once or whatever. But this kid gets into the business very early. He's very advanced in this industry for how young he was. Like I said, as a freaking kid, under 18 when I say kid, like, he's running his own site for scouting, and his you know, it's funny how he kind of ranked himself a little higher. I like how he did that. But One thing, you know, he got in there early and often, and then he did have an issue when he got in there. It wasn't his fault. It got explained. Everything was cool. And he's working for Andy Miller, a huge, huge agent. And he's not an actual agent yet. You know, he's like a junior agent slash, they're calling him a runner, basically. And so, you know, the FBI finds this dude who's in trouble. And this is what kills me. You know, here's a guy who is way more crooked, who is taking money from players. The guy's literally stealing. He's breaking laws. You know,
shit
not
movies.
Right, yeah, exactly. with Ving Rhames, and I remember that. Ving's like, I'll take the money. Who cares? You're going to give me $80,000? I'll do it. But the crazy thing is the guy's actually stealing money over and over and over again, and he should go to jail. You know, he should be in trouble. That's a felony, you know, that type of stuff. But here's this kid, or this guy now, he's in his 20s now, you know, at that point, but he's like, he's the runner or whatever, but he's doing everything, not just the runner. And the funny thing is the FBI comes in, so they use this shady dude, and they try to get a bunch on tape. So they have the LSU coach on tape. They got a bunch, the Arizona Miller, like they have a ton of evidence that way. And that LSU coach is the most brazen dude. It is hilarious when you see that. But my thing is, he admitted right off the jump, listen, we are paying players. It's not a law though. These are rules of eligibility. It's not a law I'm breaking. I am doing that though. I am doing that for sure. So he's coming clean. He's not up there acting like this poor innocent victim.
True.
You know, he says, he really explains himself, and some of it's self-deprecating, you know what I mean? But here's this FBI agent, two of them, but especially this one dude who's the lead of it, which is crazy because all of a sudden the lead of the investigation just goes away, which was just ridiculous. But they had on camera and tape a lot of this stuff. And they're basically trying to put money, taxpayer money, by the way, trying to put money in this guy's hand and let it go from the hand to the coach. And this guy continually tells him, hey, dude, like, get the coaches on the same page. The amount of money, first of all, you'd have to take a lot of money unless you're at a smaller school, but then you're not developing pros. His whole point was like, dude, he kept fighting it. He's like, nah, like. And then at some point, he said, I don't want to pay. Like, going after the coaches doesn't really line up, dude. But this FBI agent kept pushing. But I just want a group of them. I want, like, a team of coaches on the same. And it's like, dude, the coaches aren't going to – like, the coaches only have so much influence. Like, there's people closer to them that have way more. And you have to have influence on the kid as far as, like you mentioned, you know, knowing the person for quite a while so you can build trust and everything like that. Sure. If you come on some random, hey, dude, here's some dough, they're going to be like, who is this fucking guy? And he even admitted, like, what are you going to talk to these coaches about, dude? What are you going to say? You don't even know them. They don't know you. It's going to look shady as hell. They're going to think you're the cops, you know, basically saying that, you know. And sure, he kept basically telling him on tape, I don't want to pay the coaches, which that is illegal. That is a felony because they are basically – they work for the state because they get paid by government funds and through the colleges, the universities, which is – you know, some of them are private. Most of them are public though too. So either way, you're getting some funds. And so that makes it – it's a public figure. So that makes it a felony because now you're paying that, you know. And it's just crazy the amount, like, he's basically saying, so I started just taking the money. And he talked about the Arizona assistant coach, the USC assistant coach. And he's like, hey, dude, here's how this is going to work. We're going to go in there. We're going to say some stuff. We're going to talk to him. I'm going to take the money. We're going to leave. And basically, he never gave the fucking money to the coaches. And he just kept putting it back in the bank. Because he said, well, this is – because he was actually getting funded to start his own business, and he had a couple of people that helped him fund him. He would do the work, and they'd split up the money. And it's just crazy how this guy – they can still get you in trouble and let all these other coaches scot-free in universities they could still get him in trouble, but he's the one who said, no, I don't want to pay coaches, basically.
Yeah, that the Jeff D'Angelo was the name of the agent who appeared pretty hopeless. And yet, as it kind of wraps up, you know, he's going to court. He's the one guy that's fighting against this just because, as Chris said, there's no federal law stating that, hey, dude, you can't do this. Like, yes, it's frowned upon by NCAA, but federally, you know, he's not going – he shouldn't be serving time in prison. And the, I believe the trial is still going on to this day, as we know. But I guess my kind of last point is, you know, the FBI, and I'm sure they've done thousands of great things for our country, like, clearly weren't prepped for this sport thing at all. Like, even I know that, hey, the money that Will Wade attempted to pay Ayton, I guarantee it came from boosters. Like, Will Wade did not go into his checking account,
right,
pull out $40,000, and then give DeAndre Ayton $40,000 from his own checking account. I mean, these guys aren't that dumb, you know. So clearly, the boosters for these schools are paying these kids' monies, which sounds logical. That's why, you know, the more the school money, the more better athletes they get, in theory, you know. Like, the coaches aren't just dishing out cash. And, I mean, if you ever, you know, got footage of a coach, like, in public, you know, it's just the FBI really just did a poor job of going into this case with, like, a mindset. Obviously, they were trying to frame Christian Walker. They were able to get him. But, like you said, Chris, to get the coaches, like, I don't think Roy Williams and Coach K and Coach Cal are all going to, like, get together one day and, like, guys, here's some money. Like, let's go get some picks. Like,
right.
It doesn't make logical sense.
Well, and the companies, the shoe companies, too. Let's talk about that, because they're the ones who are funding the universities hundreds of millions of dollars. So there's a money stream right there, too.
Oh yeah. Oh, the shoe contracts, holy God, there was – they listed five or six blue blood college schools, and yeah, they were all getting over 100 million in shoes. A couple of them were over 200 million. I don't want to say. I mean, you're looking at the, like, Arizona, Kentucky, Oregon. I don't know exactly if you watch it, but yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, just it was a fascinating documentary, because, as you said, this Christian Walker doesn't give an F at all. Like, he's pretty much saying, dude, FBI, F y'all. Like, I know I'm a part of this scheme, but I'm like one fish in an ocean.
Right.
And y'all tried to bring me down, and y'all didn't do your research, and I'm just going to kind of laugh about this, do this documentary, and I'll see my day in court. But, you know, I mean, at worst, I could see this guy maybe having to serve maybe a year, if even that, just because, you know, I don't know. It was fascinating, and it is a good watch. If you've not seen it yet, go to HBO, HBO Now, HBO Go. If you have HBO channels, I know they've been,
yeah,
re-airing it quite a bit, just because it was fascinating. If you're a college basketball fan or an NBA fan or even a college sports fan, and you've had this idea in your head of, dude, the NCAA does this right, I don't want to see these kids get paid, because there are people that do believe that.
Sure.
Watch this documentary and then see if your head changes. Like, dude, I get we can't be giving these kids all 10 grand a month or something crazy,
right,
but maybe they deserve, you know, some type of, hey, here's $3,000 a semester. Something. No.
Yeah, or like have an account that when you get out of school, then you get it, you know?
And will there still be cheating? Sure. But if you give these kids something to live off of, you know, while they're in college, that could probably avoid or eliminate some of this money. Because, you know, this is my last point. I have heard a lot of athletes who do, they love to go to college for free, you know, because they get their scholarships. But 98% of these athletes that go to college literally are struggling to get by, because your life is school. You obviously got to pass your classes. You got to work out like an Olympic athlete, because that's how the programs are nowadays. Then you're practicing sports. So,
yeah, and you can't work. You can't have a job. It's illegal.
Yeah, so a majority of these kids, unless you have rich parents, like, they go to college, they're playing football, they practice 2 hours a day, they hit the weight room a couple hours a day, they go to class, they have a little fun, but, yeah, you can't have a job. So, you know, you wonder why these kids ask for money. Well, shit, I'm going for a 4.0, and I want to be a good tackle for Ohio State. Like, dude, I need cash. Like, where am I supposed to get it? So, again, if you're against it, watch it. See if it changes your mind. If it doesn't, so be it. But it was a very good I believe 2 hours of just fascinating footage. They did a really good job on the documentary as well.
They did. And up until now, I was going to say up until Shabazz Napier was the one who came out and said, "Hey, dude, we don't get enough food. Like, straight up, I don't get enough food. Like, seriously, yeah. We don't, you know? And it could be like 8 o'clock and the place is shut down where you get food, you know, part of your stipend. But even the stipend, you got to remember, especially in football, but in all sports, when you get there, they want you to work out. Like you said, they want you to put weight on. So you got to know that when you work out that many times, you're going to be hungry, right? You're going to be hungrier than the average person because you just burnt it off. But also they want you to gain weight. So now you're having to try to, you know, and that's why you used to see a lot of pros get to the pros and be like, oh, okay, now I can really gain weight. Now, since Shabazz made that big stink, they did change the rules where it's unlimited now. Maybe not 100% unlimited, but you can get Gatorade, you can get food, you can get a bunch of stuff, and it's not just these time of the day and that's it. You know, it's basically unlimited now. So that food is like the most for athletes. Food is like, why was that ever limited? That makes me go crazy. But also, you know, the NCAA doesn't pay taxes, and they've been making money for years and years and years. But speaking of the NCAA, they slashed their payouts to school by $375 million due to the cancellation. This is from USA Today. So now it's $225 million payout. The move voted on from the NCAA top governing board of college presidents resulted in blah, blah, you know, the tournament. But the event generates nearly all the association's roughly $1.1 billion in normal revenue. So they're paying out, but it's much, much less, which brings up another quick point. We'll get, you know, just get you real quick. You know, how are they going to fund the winter and spring seniors coming back, especially in like a sport of basketball where you have 300 and some odd schools? So maybe they can't have these seniors come back because they just can't afford it with their budget right now. And who knows? I mean, hopefully college football doesn't get affected, but it definitely could. And that's a big money maker. And like I said earlier, basketball and football across the country do run, help a lot of schools. And that's another thing with the NCAA and college in general. It's like football and basketball and college helps the schools in so many ways, not just the other sports, but the schools themselves. It's free advertising. It's money to help raise money to help your school as far as technology and improving it and all that. And obviously, we don't even got to talk about facilities, but maybe just financially, they're not going to be able to do it. And if that's the case, maybe we should look for the NCAA, you know, reserves. Where's the, you know, all these billions you've been making tax-free? Where's your reserves? Did you buy stock back too, like some of these big companies?
Yeah, I know that they passed that only the spring sports get the extra year, you know, but that still is a ton of sports. And it's a tough situation. But again, if the seniors coming back, just find a way to help them. You know, I just do what you got to do. I mean, you know, you're off the hook for football, off the hook for basketball. All the other smaller sports, I guess, you just got to find a way, you know, because, like, some people in our country keep saying this is such a weird situation in their experience. Well, if that's the case, you know, do what you can for the NCAA, you know, senior athletes who want to play another year. And as you said, dude, you're making billions a year. So you can't suck it up for 1 year and figure out financially. Like, hopefully you can, because those kids shouldn't have to pay the price for this happening. And find a way to make it for these kids, I suppose, who would be like in like golf or maybe like baseball. You know, find a way to make it happen. That's all I can say. It is tough. It won't happen next year. Maybe if this we have a pandemic again, they'd be like, you know what, we tried once, can't do it again. But yeah, the only weird news I saw, Chris, is that as this news goes out, which again, give the spring sports an extra year. Sure, the Ivy League said no. So, like, the bougie, like, most expensive schools in the country who
have crazy who don't donors.
You're going to cancel those kids' like, careers for sports? Like, I get that Yale and Harvard aren't winning football titles or basketball titles, but, like, I can't imagine.
Their endowment's got to be nuts, dude.
The money costs to go to Harvard or Yale, and you're the one conference in America that says, sorry, seniors, you're out. Like, what the F? I don't know what their rationale is, because you can't tell me it's money.
They're going to say the revenue from the game. We don't sell as many tickets as those other places. We don't have that big TV contract, and that's great, but you know what? Not many people have your endowment either. So, I mean, yeah, it's pretty crazy, but, you know.
Yeah.
What are you going to do? You know, last week we are going to get to start to list. Basically, there's this SportingNews.com put out a 36 best teams, put out a list, 36 best teams that didn't win a tournament. We are going to reference that in a short little bit and kind of talk our way through it. As far as, like, programs or runs that we remember, I last week I did UConn as far as, you know, the 95 to 2005, basically. And it's funny because at that point in the 99 championship, they were the underdogs, but it was more of a slight underdog to Duke. They were a high seed. And like I mentioned, from like 94 and on, they had started to, you know, collect a lot of great players. And you could see that program was turning. And then when they won it again in the early 2000s, what was that, 2004 or something like that? They were expected to win that year, you know. But the last two championships, UConn definitely was not expected to win. But yet, and I really, well, for obvious reasons, of course, Kansas or Kentucky or one of the, you know, top flight schools could have won it this year easily, could have won it tonight. But also, it could have been a fourth seed or a seventh seed or something like that. And that's basically what UConn was on. The 2010-2011 season, they were 9-9. In the Big East, and this is the old school Big East, 32-9 on the season. And they had like a guard system. All three of them in the pros I mentioned, Shabazz, Napier. He was on that squad, Jeremy Lamb, that long, lanky guard. And then, of course, Kemba Walker was a junior on that squad. And like I said, they finished 500 as far as in that, you know, tough conference, obviously, but they were definitely not a team where you thought, oh, okay, you know, they're definitely going to win it, or they even have a chance. And they made a nice run, obviously, to win five straight, you know, DePaul, Georgetown, Pittsburgh, Syracuse, and Louisville. And I remember a step back or two by Kemba. And I remember we were actually in Vegas watching Kemba walk as a freshman on those Thanksgiving tournaments, and we're like, oh god, who's this freaking guy? But then they beat Bucknell, they beat Cincinnati, they beat San Diego State, they beat Zona by like 2 points, 56-55 over Kentucky that year. And then of course they beat Butler in a very, you know, defensive minded game. They ended up winning 53-41. But this was a squad that, like I said, was guard heavy. You know, it wasn't – they only had three pros on the team. Obviously, when you have Kemba, that helps. But I remember that Alex Arikai or whatever, that guy could, you know, rebound and block shots pretty well. That Roscoe Smith was another, like, youngster at that time that you know, gave him pretty good minutes. So they had, like, a backup center, Akawondu or whatever. He came out but that was a team that came out of nowhere. But those three guards, you just couldn't do much about it, man. They just found a way to get shots, and obviously it helps when you got Kemba.
Yeah, Kemba was just, like, magical. You know, it does seem like UConn always had that, you know, guard from the East Coast or wherever, but their guards just had, like, some swagger to them. So come tournament time, they would go on runs that just no one could stop. They were kind of just that, as you said, kind of in the – like 90s and 2000s, early, just they went on just a hell of a run. And I think maybe it's kind of, I mean, maybe you like the color blue, maybe it was the jerseys, maybe it was because they were a little bit of a smaller school, but there was something just kind of cool about that team where I don't think they had like the hatred of Duke or of like right. Kentucky or Kansas or Carolina is just kind of like that, dude. We're kind of like that tough and rugged. Like we could play out in street ball. We could beat you on the court. They kind of had just that look to them that it was really hard not to cheer for them. Unless you were like, obviously a fan of another team in the Big East, like a Syracuse or Georgetown or something, which is fair. But they just had a little bit of that flashy sense to them. And anytime they would need like big buckets, that they would have a guard that would just step up, like Rip Hamilton or Kemba or whoever else, or Cliff Ralamine, right. I mean, like you're talking about last week. They just had a little bit of a flash to them, which made for good, enjoyable television. And I mean, you got to see him play in the Big East tournament, and then you see him go in the tournament runs, and it was just a special, probably about 10 to 12 year run there, Chris, where they were a really damn good team with a great, great coach in Calhoun for that run. And it was just, yeah, they were just a consistently fun to watch team. Like I said, unless you hated them, then you probably weren't enjoying that gap.
Right. And they just, they fit that bill of an East Coast squad. Like you said,
they did.
They'd have guys that break you down off the dribble, hard-nosed defensive guys that a lot of them didn't even get into the draft or go to the pros or anything like that. It's funny, the year Kemba left as a junior, the very next year they were 8-10 again, but they had Andrew Drummond on their squad. They lost him, but they kept Napier, they kept Lamb, they added Drummond, and they got knocked out by Iowa State in the first round. Like, they did actually much worse. And it just really shows you, just Kemba in general, as far as some of the things that guy is capable of. But they also kept around a guy, Shabazz, who I do like. He's been a pretty good pro as well. My Minnesota Timberwolves had him this last year, good off the bench. They lost Tyus Jones, so they had to get somebody off the bench. But that year, when you look at the year that they won, you know, they had 2013-2014. They beat St. Joseph. They beat Villanova. They beat Iowa State. They beat Michigan State. They beat Florida, and they beat Kentucky. And when you look at, like, it has rankings going into it. Nova, 6th in the country. Iowa State, 9th. Michigan State, 11th. Florida was number 1. Like, Kentucky, they beat Kentucky in the finals, obviously. They beat – I mean, they basically – they didn't have too many tight games. The St. Joseph game was overtime. That was their tightest one. They won that one 89-81. They were tight during the game, but the last score – they didn't need a bucket to win it type thing. You know what I mean? They didn't have too many of those. But the key ingredients to that team, once again, they're a better team. They were 32-8. They're 12-6, third in the AAC. That was the AAC too. I forgot that was already happened there. 2013-2014, and they just had Shabazz. No other pro on that team. DeAndre Daniels, Boatwright. I remember him. Like, you look at these names, you're like, Calhoun, is that Calhoun's son? Like, I mean, there was nobody on that squad. But they used a guard in Shabazz Napier, and they cut down the nets again on one of those what felt like was going to be this year type thing too. Although the first one I explained back in 2011, that was more of a seventh seed or whatever. But that was an interesting year too, because they just kept picking away at it, and pretty soon you're like, okay, they won it, and that was Kevin Olley's first or second season.
Yeah, they had that swag to them. I mean, Kevin Olley had a nice little run there. I know a lot of people were kind of like, well, why the hell did you hire this guy? Because I don't think he had a huge background besides the fact that he played there. But right. You definitely shut people up when you go and win a national title. There's not much you can say about a guy if he's cutting down the nets for a school he used to play for. And I guess the switch to my boys, who I'll go through this quickly. I could spend a lot of time on this, but I know we want to still break down the 36 best teams ever won a title. I hit on the Carolina players I loved last week of, like, Jameson, Vince Carter, Rasheed Wallace. I once shook the guy's hand, biggest human being I've ever seen in my life. I had to, like, look up to the dude that's 6'9". Lots of good players in Carolina. Obviously, I don't recall Jordan. My mom thinks that's why I became a Carolina Tar Heels fan. Maybe subliminally that was. But had a lot of good teams in the 90s that I fell in love with. Those teams didn't quite win a title, which is hard to believe with the names they had. But once the 2000s rolled around, I've been very spoiled. In 2004, 2005, it was my first year in college. I remember watching these games at the UND dorms in Grand Forks. They went 33-4, and they cut down the nets against Illinois. That was the year where you had the Illinois-Arizona crazy Elite Eight game, which I know Chris has talked about on this podcast. And Illinois was a really good team. They're actually ranked number one pretty much the whole season. Just unfortunately for Illinois that year, Carolina was just a little bit better. And again,
they had a three-guard system too.
Oh, well, I mean, Illinois had Deron Williams and Dee Brown and Luther Powell. That Illinois team was freaking stacked.
That was a squad.
That was, I think they only lost two games all year.
I'm still looking for that inbound foul on Woods, but we'll keep moving, keep moving.
That Carolina team was just, they had a great post in Sean May. Dude was just a solid player, and he ended up having, I think, probably a 7 to 8 year career in the NBA. A lot of it was Charlotte Bobcats. Rashad McCants, who was a great guard. Dude turned out to be a little crazy, but a good basketball player. And then they had the Williams brothers, Jawad and Marvin, even though they weren't brothers. Marvin played 1 year and went pro, and my guy, Raymond Felton. Carolina always had a really good guard, whether it was the guy I love, Ed Cota, Felton, Ty Lawson. They always had a dude that could push the tempo, and that's what that team did. But when you had to settle down, you could feed Sean May, feed Marvin Williams on the post, or go to Jawad Williams, who was a senior. Excuse me. So, again, they had a couple of close scares. They actually played against the Villanova team, who I still remember. I remember watching that game, as crazy as that is. And this was back when Jay Wright was trying to get his boys together. Carolina beat them, I believe, in the Sweet 16. But that Villanova team, talk about remembering names, Chris. Randy Foy, Alan Ray, Mike Nardi, Kyle Lowry. Like, and for that game when Carolina played them, those Villanova had seven people play, and the seventh guy named Marcus Austin played 7 minutes. And that was back when Jay Wright pretty much invented like a four-guard system. And Carolina won that game 67-66. But I just remember that was like, holy shit, Jay Wright's a pretty good coach. And just he had all these guards that would jack up threes and have a post. And it's like, oh, this guy might be something. So 04-05, they beat Illinois, which was obviously a fun run for me. 08-09, this was the special one. This is the teams that I'll argue is one of the best teams of all time for college basketball. They lost the year before, and I remember, I'll never forget, when my buddy Ian sent me a text one day and saying, dude, all the boys are coming back. Because there was the fear that Hansborough, Wayne Ellington, and Ty Lawson were all going to go pro. And fair is fair, they probably could have gone pro as they deserved to. But
that's been, not to interrupt you, but that's been key in their last three championships too, is bringing back guys, you know?
100%. And Danny Green as well. So you had this pact, I don't know what they made. Maybe they want to enjoy another year of college. Maybe they're still getting paid by Christian Dawkins. You know, who knows? They were enjoying the life at Chapel Hill, but that team was just loaded. Hansborough went pro, Ellington went pro, Lawson went pro, Danny Green went pro, Deion Thompson didn't, but Ed Davis did. I mean, pretty much your top six guys for minutes, five went pro. So it was a loaded team. They were pissed off from heartbreak the year before against Kansas, I believe. And they really just simply took care of business. And why I say one of the best teams of all time is because, I mean, they went 34-4. So they didn't have too many hiccups during the season. I do remember watching them lose to Boston College when I lived in Vegas. I don't know why it's stuck in my head. It's so weird. I remember basketball games from 11 years ago, like to this day, but I can't remember to ever lock my house door when I leave. But anyways, I love sports. They lost to Maryland that year. And then actually the crazy thing is they actually lost the second game of the ACC tournament. So they didn't win the ACC tournament. But come tournament time, excuse me, they beat Radford 101-58. They beat LSU 84-70, which was a little bit of a scare because Ty Lawson had rolled his ankle that game, but they still won by 14. They beat Gonzaga 98-77, beat Oklahoma 72-60, beat Villanova that year 83-69, and then beat Sparty 89-72. I actually watched that game last week just to have a flashback for fun. And that game was 30-10 midway through the first half. So, and that was obviously a good Sparty team. Draymond Green was on that now that I rewatched and recalled it. But, like, they just were on a damn warpath, Chris. And obviously, I know I'm biased, but not many teams who won titles can go through and win every game double digits. They really were a special team. I obviously feel special because I got a Ty Lawson autograph and actually a signed shoe from the guy when I went to watch him play the Timberwolves versus the Nuggets one time. So I'm always loving the guy. Any comments on the 09 Heels?
Yeah, I mean, within about 4 minutes, you knew the game was over in the national championship. And like you said, the Michigan State squad was really, really good, too. They just couldn't once they got going, it was just like a train that you couldn't stop. You couldn't derail. They were just so talented, so deep, and they did play a really fun style of ball to watch, that's for sure.
Yeah, they Ty Lawson just ran up and down the court, and when you slowed him down, they would just feed Hansborough. So, I mean, that one was special. I really enjoyed that team. I'll shut up now, but that
I just remember him bleeding a lot, too, Hansborough. He's just, I'm bleeding, I don't care, I'm going.
Yeah,
remember
a couple of those
his nose up and all that
at Duke. Yep. Yeah, that was a hell of a team, hands down one of the top 10 best teams ever. You can debate who's really up there, but it was a fun team the way they dominated. And lastly, Carolina won it a couple of years ago. Now, as I mentioned last week on the podcast, this team thought they were going to win a title in 2016. In March, but they had a Villanova buzzer beater crush my heart while I was hungover from drinking beer and watching baseball the whole day for opening day with my dad in town hanging out with my best friend. But nonetheless, Carolina came back the next year. Now, this wasn't your typical loaded team. They didn't have like the players I just mentioned prior who were like an NBA loaded staff. But again, like normal, Roy put together a group of players who just loved to run down the court, had a couple of bigs. They just played his style. They went 33-7, so it wasn't like the best record ever. But Justin Jackson was a great, just big that could shoot jumpers. Joel Berry pushed the court for us as our kind of a quick point guard. Kennedy Meeks and Isaiah Hicks. Like Hicks, Meeks, and Jackson were three really good bigs, and you had Luke May, too. So and Theo Pinson. That was kind of a team where Carolina just had like four or five bigs that were NBA potential, and teams can really match up with them. Like, this wasn't the loaded 09 squad that can run you to death and have NBA talent. We just had our NBA talent that year was just a shitload of bigs. And when you have four or five bigs that can out-rebound everyone, I mean, we really weren't even that great of a shooting team, per se, but just you couldn't stop people in the post. I mean, realistically, Chris, most colleges nowadays have one or two bigs that are good. So when you have a team with four to five bigs that can go pro, it's kind of a clusterfuck trying to guard that on defense.
Yeah, no doubt about it. No doubt about it at all. And then we'll just kind of close the show by going over. We don't have to go over all 36, but Sporting News put out, like I mentioned earlier, 36 teams that the best 36 teams that never won a championship. And obviously with the single game elimination, it makes it tougher than, say, the NBA or, you know, baseball or hockey, professional leagues anyway. Well, actually, in the World Series of Baseball, they do best out of three, don't they? No, I think about it. In the World Series of College Baseball, don't they do a best out of three? I'm pretty sure.
They do. It's a round robin. Once you get to Omaha,
right.
Play, but yeah, it is best out of three for the championship. Yes, you're right.
So I guess that other than that, though, it is tough because sometimes you just fall flat, things happen, blah, blah, blah. Or like it says number one on the list, you got, you know, players point shaving, allegedly. and that's, you can tell, you can say whatever you want. Like we went over this a couple weeks ago with Duke. But, like how they added Grant Hill was the major addition from the year before when they got their ass kicked, by the same UNLV squad. But This got to be the number one, man. I mean, it, like it says right here, they averaged 97.7 a game. They had just destroyed them. Anderson Hunt did have a 3-point attempt to lose, you know, to try to win it, but they didn't get it done. But if you look at Larry Johnson, Stacey Ogman, Greg Anthony, I just mentioned Anderson Hunt. I think they won on the road at Arkansas. Maybe it was a neutral site. They were 34-1 that year, undefeated. Obviously, I mean that team was so destructively good. I still can't believe it didn't win, but I still think it's point shaving. But that's allegedly. But number two, and this is no surprise either. Another undefeated team. Well, they were undefeated, 38-1. Duke won it that year. They ended up beating Wisconsin. That freaking team, though, they were looking at a 40-0 with Calipari that had Towns and Cauley Stye and the backcourt of the Harrison twins and what's his toes, who's one of the best players out of all of them, plays for Phoenix.
Booker.
I mean, they had so much damn talent on that squad, you forget one of them. That definitely has to be up there, Marshall, as far as one of you know, the biggest, I guess you could say, choke jobs.
And I remember being in Vegas, Twin Peaks at Planet Hollywood, watching that, dude. I swear, I always remember sports until the day I die. yeah, I remember watching that game in Vegas at Twin Peaks, and I was like, you know, I've always been a little bit of a Badger fan because my friend Ian had mentioned earlier, because that's his team, and I was like, dude, you know, could they pull this off? Like, probably not, because that team was so loaded. They had not had any hiccups up until that point that I recall. And again, you had a potential of at least 4 to 5 guys going to NBA. And Wisconsin just played that old school, slow down, boring type of basketball they play. And I mean, that Wisconsin squad wasn't a joke. That wasn't a fluke game. Now, was Wisconsin as good if they play them 10 times, they don't win 9 of them. But the Wisconsin team wasn't hideous, but they were obviously not loaded with the talent they had. And on that given night, they just couldn't quite get together. I do remember watching that. The game was close the whole way through.
Yeah, it was razor close. And they did have a bunch of talent from the year before that made the Final Four.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Wisconsin somehow pulled off the 71-64 win. But, I mean, it was just, you're right, that was a letdown. I mean, again, the Badgers team was respectable, but with the talent they had and the way they'd been playing that whole year, that was obviously a disappointment to lose to the Badgers in the Elite Eight. Like, no one really saw that one coming. Even if you're a dire Badger fan, you had to believe, like, oh, man, here we go. It's been a good run, but the year's over. I want to say one of the Harrison brothers had kind of an off night, obviously, which you had to have a little bit of for the team to lose, but they were held to 64 points, so clearly the tempo was slower than expected. I saw that number three was Georgetown when I was kind of going through notes. That happened the year I was born. So I believe Patrick Ewing in college, I mean, I shouldn't say believe. I know Ewing was incredible in college, but I didn't see the game played. Obviously, I wouldn't argue with it because Ewing turned out to be one of the best bigs of all time. I will say, Chris, the team I talked about last week, that Carolina team with Ed Cota and Jameson Vince Carter, how I loved them, freaking Utah beat us. And they turned out being number 5 on this list. Now, clearly this is one person's opinion, but I remember last week saying that Carolina team was one of the best teams of all time that never won.
Yeah.
And they put them 5, so that's pretty fair. I can't believe they put Duke number 4. I think that's a crock of shit, but, you know, whatever. And they actually lost to UConn. Go figure, we tied this all together.
I think it's because that was a pretty deep squad, though, too. But, yeah, you're right. I don't think it's as talented when you actually look back at it. I mean, Corey Maggette's was a pretty good reserve type, good six-man type player, and Brand was a stud. But yes. Avery didn't do anything, and I can attest because, you know, the Timberwolves draft him in the first round. He didn't do shit.
And I'll make one note because I did go through this whole list, and one team that stood out to me, and I can't believe they actually put him at 20th, was the Kentucky team of 2009-2010. Now, for this game, I was living in your neck of the woods where my family's from, Minneapolis. I remember working at Applebee's that night, and it was the Kentucky 2009-2010 team that lost to West Virginia. They were 35-3. Now, The reason I bring this up is because I'm sure some people remember watching this who listen to our podcast, that that was the night where West Virginia won 73-66. With that being said, Kentucky shot 4 of 32 from 3, which obviously is 12.5%, which is not good. But that Kentucky team's offensive lineup was John Wall, Patrick Patterson, DeMarcus Boogie Cousins, Darius Miller, Eric Bledsoe, DeAndre Liggins.
That's right, because they had that three-pointer. I remember Bledsoe, they couldn't hit a three to save their life, but Bledsoe started the tournament, and he was like 8-10 in one of these games. I'm like, all right. That was definitely a squad I had winning that year. And they were, I mean, you had John Wall. So they were so fast up that court, dude. It was. I remember watching my roommate. He's like, holy shit, these guys could get up the court. I'm like, dude, this is going to be a fun game to watch, you know, just watch. And it was just like, boom, boom, boom. But I remember West Virginia didn't hit a regular two-point field goal till in the second half, like 4 or 5 minutes into the second half. They had hit all threes until, like, I think at the 16-minute mark of the second half. So it's that's tough to compete, too. This freaking team just raining threes like West Virginia.
And you're right, and I'll give you those numbers. West Virginia shot 10 of 29 on two-point shots, which is 34%. That only gets you a loss. And they were 10 of 23 from three. So, yeah, they hit all threes in the first half. I'm sure they sprinkled in some free throws. But you hit as many threes as twos, which you almost never, ever, ever. I bet we could go through the thousands of games in college basketball this year, and you might find maybe a handful of those at best.
Yeah.
The fact that Deshaun Butler knocked off John Wall, Boogie, Bledsoe, Darius Miller. I mean, all five of those guys went pro, and all five are pretty damn good. So that was one that stood out to me of,
a little low on the list at 20. You're right.
Because holy shit, that team was loaded. But I'm
going to say they're better than that Duke team. They're better than that Duke team for sure. That's a good call.
Oh, I would put them above quite a few handful of teams, you know, if we're going to be a little technical, because to be 20th with John Wall and Bledsoe and all those guys, yeah, they probably could have ran up and down the court against a lot of other teams too, Chris.
Yeah, that I remember how fast they got up at the court. The bigs could run too. Obviously, Boogie is not afraid of running unless it's on defense. But we'll figure that out later. Number 7 was that squad I talked about with Kansas, 96-97. This one's good, too, and we've mentioned this them a couple of times when we've been doing this reminiscence stuff. Arkansas, 94-95, they got beat by Toby Bailey and the O'Bannon brothers.
Oh, shit. Old school.
At UCLA.
I remember those.
Dude, they had Corliss Williamson, Scotty Thurman, and Clint McDaniel, and I always think about Scotty Thurman. Well, you know, Williamson, he actually had a pretty good pro career. He's pretty solid anyway.
Yeah.
He was just, you know, a roughhouse down low. But Thurman with that freaking that three-point shot, man, those rainbow threes, dude. But, yeah, they almost lost 79-78 to Texas Southern early on, but they ended up losing to Toby Bailey and them. They were number 6 on the chart. They did win a championship the year before, and they were favored to win that. And then, obviously, number 8, we'll hit this list up on next week, too. We won't go through the whole list. But North Carolina ended up – this is the timeout debacle. But that this was the Fab Five as sophomores. And that's just so crazy, like, to think that the whole Fab Five came fucking back, dude. They all came back. Like, and actually only Weber went out, I'm pretty sure. Or maybe it was Weber and Howard. And then – no, I think Weber was the only one out. Then Howard and Rose the next year. And Jimmy King – and what's his toes the other dude? I can't think of him right now. He freaking those guys stayed in their senior year. So it just shows you the depth. And, of course, that was a nice win by North Carolina with Eric Montross. I remember him. And they had that really good guard, Williams, just a solid defender guard too. But that number 9 was that dude, that team we just mentioned, Illinois 2004-2005. Duke 2001-2002, when Maryland won with Jason Williams and Boozer and Dunleavy, that's probably a tad high, but it definitely should be on the list. And then last year, not this year, but last year's team, Virginia won it, but, you know, with Zion and Barrett and a variety of other guys too. That was one that they're probably a little high on this list because you did see them that year. They didn't necessarily look like they're for sure going to win the championship, but they're 32-6 that year. And one more, you can name a couple too here, but one more was that Ohio State club. They got beat by Florida. They had Greg Oden and Mike Conley in that shooter. Actually, that was a couple years after that. Ron Lewis, I think, was the shooter. What did it say? Ron Lewis, three-pointer, helped Buckeyes avoid upset against Xavier in the second round. They went to the championship game, end up getting beat by a back-to-back Florida squad that had some inner turmoil during the year because of somebody effing a good buddy's girlfriend. But, hey, that's something else. That's something different. But, yeah, Oden. And I remember we were in call, we were in school for this one, dude. And remember our freaking – one of our professors said that Oden is had injuries. That Oden's going to be an overrated pro. And, man, did he hit that on the nose.
Yeah, that, and I've seen – if it's the guy I'm thinking about, man, we argued with him quite a bit.
Yeah, short glasses.
Yeah, oh,
kind of
yeah,
funny, but kind of like, dude, what the hell are you talking about? Kind of in between.
Some days he was kind of just a prick to us, honestly.
Yeah,
but
right, yep. But he was right there. I'll give him credit. If I ever see him, be like, hey, you were right.
Yeah, you're still kind of a prick, but you were right. So my only one, and I'll save the rest for later. But, again, if we're arguing about putting people in the right spots, you got to look past the record because they put Wichita State, who was 35-1 that year. Okay, they did lose to Kentucky in that game. I remember seeing that in San Diego, but for one of our March trips. But that number 17 Wichita State would not have touched the floor with that Kentucky team I mentioned at 20. So
yeah, they should be on the list.
Is this record? Is this a pull complimenting teams who had great records during the regular season? Because if so, that's fine. But if you said the best teams never won a title, this Wichita team.
Yeah.
Again, they had a hell of a year with, like, Van Vliet and Baker. Like, they were a good team. But they would have got destroyed by that Kentucky team. There's Carolina right above them, you know. So it makes
anyone
you wonder
on the list.
Yeah. So, yeah. So that's a fun list to do. And like Chris said, we'll hit on some more points as we go on next week. Any last comments you want to make, brother, before we roll out of here today?
No, sir.
All right, well, as I always say, you know, stay home and stay safe. I've said that, I don't know, I started doing that a couple of years ago just because I think it's a nice thing to say. Now it's more true than ever. Again, you know, stay home, wait it out, tell your friends and family to do the same so you can avoid those people going on Twitter talking about, hey, I just lost my loved one and I can't even see them. Like, the less of that, like, the better for everyone involved. Even though it's crazy to get home, again, go for a run when you can, go work out. Try to find a new show, pick up a new hobby, do something. But we all want to be positive. So until next Monday, the boys are out. Have a good one. Peace.